And welcome to Nintendo Nostalgia. I'm your host, Ryan Black, and I'm joined with my co-host, Chris Warren, and we are back and we are playing with power. Chris, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing great. Hey, everyone. Sorry we've been away for quite a while, but I'm thrilled to be back, thrilled to be with Ryan, and thrilled to be talking about all things Nintendo. There's been a lot going on, and we're going to try to, you know, keep up with more episodes, but it's great to be back. How are you, Ryan?
I'm doing pretty good. It's nice to have a holiday that is newly established and doesn't have a lot of like do things with family traditions built up around it, or like, you know, celebrating in certain ways. So like you just get the day off to do whatever. And so like we get to do podcasting. So that's great that we have that freedom carved out for us.
Yeah, very convenient. And I'm glad we took advantage of it.
Yeah, definitely. We've got lots to talk about. This is going to be a celebration episode on the 4th of July for not necessarily sure if it's going to come out on that day, but we've got a cute name for it and everything. So looking forward to this. But before we get into the main topic, let's go ahead and get into what we are radical rexing about. All right, Chris, kick us off. What you been playing?
I've been playing a lot for once. I know a lot of our listeners might remember that, you know, it's very hard for me to play games with all the stuff that's going on in my life and how busy I can be. But I've beaten a lot of games lately. And if you're on our Facebook group, you've probably noticed, but I beat The Gardens Between, GRIS, A Short Hike, and I think one other that I'm forgetting, but all of these games are insanely good. I highly, highly recommend each of them. So again, The Gardens Between, it's an excellent, like, I don't know, 2D plane environmental puzzle game. GRI is a 2D platformer, very simple controls, but gorgeous, gorgeous visuals. And A Short Hike, which is basically like if Animal Crossing were a very, very easy 3D platformer. These are phenomenal experiences. And right now I'm playing Wavetale, which is a 3D platformer that has the vibes of Legend of Zelda Wind Waker. And for an indie game, it's so good. It controls extremely well, and it's just so imaginative. I'm really impressed by this team. And the last thing I'll mention is I just became a member, or not member, but I purchased the expansion pack for the Switch. So I've been enjoying playing like Paper Mario on my lunch breaks. It's my goal to beat Paper Mario. That's like the number one game I've been wanting to beat for like almost 15 years now. And I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. Playing it portably on my lunch breaks is just going to be a dream. So yeah, I know it's been a mouthful, but it's been a very fun few months with video games lately. So what about you, Ryan?
Good to hear. You know, I'm in the Tears of the Kingdom town, like, you know, doing that thing. I didn't get to play it very much when it came out. I got maybe 24 hours in before we had a big birthday party at the beginning of June. And after that, like, I still had some things I had to get done after. But then, you know, now it's been a couple of weeks and I've been able to get some gaming in now and get some solid time playing and finally get into the groove of things and really enjoying it. Starting to feel like I am immersed enough now that I'm enjoying the story and mechanics and everything. Whereas before I was just kind of like going through the motions and doing things here or there, not really taking it all in because I had so much going on in my life. So it's nice to have this time to finally just focus on it and really, you know, get out of it what I want from the story and the exploration. And the other night, I had a really cool moment where I was in basically an area in the sky that's like you're in thunderclouds and watching the lightning streak across the sky. And there was like light streaming through the clouds as they passed by, too, because you're in the cloud. And then you saw the blood moon rise in the background. along with the lightning streaking and the light, you know, shining through, like actual light rays coming through the clouds. Like, it was just such a beautiful thing. Like, wow. Like, I thought, you know, things are beautiful in Breath of the Wild. You know, I got to experience that in VR and be really immersed. But to know that this game actually captured that in different ways and newer ways, it was a beautiful thing. I was really, really, really amazed to see where video games have come to be like, wow, it's like going out and taking a picture of like, oh, cool, there's this really cool rainstorm with like a tornado or something, but then you see this rainbow next to it. Like, but like get those experiences of wow moments in video games. It's really cool to see. And you can just go there and experience those things, and you just have to be there and take the picture at the right time. You know, it's wonderful. I love those experiences. And then also just the ability to help people. And then as far as anything else that I've been playing, played a little bit of Splatoon 3, dusted that off. I finally updated my Pokedex, my living dex, now that Pokemon has released Scarlet and Violet to Pokemon Home. And so I, you know, sent Pokemon back and forth, make sure I had everything updated on both the game and Pokemon Home, and got that knocked out of the way. And played a little bit of Kirby Tilt and Tumble. It was just 2 days ago. Maybe this was yesterday. I was able to, like, I feel fulfilled enough in Zelda that I could stop and try some other things. So that's where I picked up Splatoon and then also played Tilt and Tumble. And I was really apprehensive about playing that one because it's my favorite Kirby game. And I didn't know how it was going to hold up. One, how it was going to translate with the Switch gyro. And two, I was worried it just wasn't going to live up to my, you know, my kid nostalgia, like rose-colored glasses. And the bit that I played, it felt really tight. It felt really accurate. And I felt like it was on point. I was definitely really comfortable with like that feeling that I got when I was first playing it, which I was really surprised because it became unplayable when I switched to the Game Boy Advance SP because the orientation was upside down, essentially with the cartridge. So it no longer was able to be used. And it was a game that wasn't able to translate outside of that experience back when, you know. And so I didn't have the cartridge. It was a really cool, clear, pink, sparkly cartridge. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's really cool to get to experience that now on the Switch. And the gyro feels right to me. I was really surprised by that. In fact, if I wanted to get it a little bit more accurate, I could even pop them in the little the Joy-Con holder controller. It's more like a Game Boy compact feel to get that true Game Boy feeling. But, it had you do the thing where you lay your system flat and you calibrate it basically, and everything felt pretty on point from what I remember playing as a kid. So I was really pleased. I haven't played like a bunch of it, but I wanted to pop in there and like kind of calm those fears. So when I came back to it, I could just jump in and play.
Yeah. I was surprised by how well it controls too. I will say, like, it's very different from the Game Boy in a way because you're holding it on a wider system. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bizarre. I got this is my analog pocket.
Yeah.
One of my main reasons for getting it was Kirby Tilt and Tumble, because it's one of those games where I don't want to say you need the original hardware, but it definitely helps and elevates it when you do have that similar form factor and stuff.
Yeah. I played Tilt and Tumble on the Game Boy Advance primarily. I mean, I had the color, but I shortly after made the switch to the Game Boy Advance. And so I had that wider feel anyway at the time. That was pretty natural. It was really cool to have that nostalgia come back with Kirby Tilt and Tumble. And like, again, it's my favorite Kirby game. And I think it's still going to hold up really well. It's one of the first Kirby games that I beat. And it was kind of like pinball, which I was really excited about. It wasn't necessarily Kirby pinball, but it was, you know, it gave me that feel, like even it has flippers and stuff in it. And so, and the colors and the music, and I was just so charmed by it all over again. Like, oh yes, this does live up to my nostalgia. And I'm excited to actually get some time into it once I've, you know, completed Breath of the Wild, most likely. But that's kind of been some of the stuff that I've been playing. You know, Pokemon Home has been a little bit of playtime, not a whole bunch. I picked up a couple of games here or there. Like, I was listening to a podcast and they said, Get Even the Ocean. It's a really cool, like, story driven game to experience. And I heard about it and I'm like, you know what? I'll give this one a try. And I haven't picked it up yet, but that's on my list of games to play next. And I believe that would be considered an indie. But they have, I think it was the All In podcast that recommended it to me. And then their other games are pretty good too. I don't have the developer on hand right now. Let me see. I'll get that pulled up so I can say, hey, here's what it, who it's by. It is, oh, it's Radalaika that, that did the distribution. So it's not necessarily the developer, but you can look up Radalaika games on the eShop if you want to find it. I've got a few of those. I got review copies early on when we were on the Nintendo Village, and I got to play some of Radalaika games. They were pretty fun. So, but yeah, don't expect anything stellar, but it is a good story. So that's pretty much what I've been playing and Radical Rex about. So cool. I think we're ready to get into the topic.
Well, before we do, one quick note about Kirby Tilt and Tubble. I think it's, I just love that Nintendo kind of incorporates the newer hardware and tries to enable us to go back to those experiences because of it. Like using the Switch gyroscope, bring back that feel of Kirby Tilt and Tumble is amazing. I didn't even think of that when they announced the game. Just wasn't really on my radar, but it works extremely well. And just another example of them doing that. Another one that comes to mind is like Duck Hunt, when they used the Wii pointer for that. That was just a genius way of incorporating the current hardware's features with the old hardware. Because there's these barriers that are going to exist, but for them to, reconceptualize it with what's currently available is just really cool. So I love that they're really trying in that way. So
I mean, I 100% see them in the future being able to bridge the gap where they bring to Game Boy, Pokemon Blue, Pokemon Red, and you can literally bridge the gap and bring your Pokemon into Pokemon Stadium. I don't know if they're gonna do the Pokemon Home thing. It'd be kind of cool if they did, but we already had that with the 3DS stuff. But being able to put that stuff into Pokemon Stadium, which is already on the 64, that would be really cool. Instead of having to use the rentals and things. So I think that there's a lot of things that they explore that they like. We can definitely get, Game Boy Advance, the WarioWare game where you just like tilted the Wario tilted or whatever it was.
Right. Yeah. Good point.
Definitely get that game on there. So there's just some of the other ones that would be like, are we going to see Boktai with the, see them bring Boktai with the sunlight thing and just use the IR sensor on the Joy-Con on the bottom or something?
Yeah.
Or maybe just do, I think they had ports where it didn't actually use sunlight, but they had some kind of mechanic to get around that for normal gameplay without a gimmick. But
yeah,
there's things like that. Like, those peripherals that are pretty much lost to time are not necessarily lost to time with this new hardware, the new capabilities. So it's really cool that they're digging into that.
Yeah, and maybe we'll get Yoshi Topsy Turvy. No, I'm kidding. I don't think anyone cares about that game. But yeah, it's kind of exciting to see that they're really brainstorming modern ways to bring back these classics. So it's exciting. Yeah.
It is definitely exciting and cool. Well, that wasn't the topic for today. We've got a whole other topic to go over. So let's go ahead and get into the topic. Happy Independence Day, everyone. Go ahead and kick us off here and talk a little bit about the history of indies. Indies started off with the concept that you don't need to have a publisher to go and post a game on a website or on a shop, because there was now an eShop available. DSiWare was some of the earliest mentions of an eShop, a place you can go and purchase games. And these indie studios that don't have a publisher, they can't afford to get a publisher to print physical games and distribute them and all that stuff, you can just skip all that and someone can just download it straight to their system and play. And so from that point on, this birthed the indie movement. And I love that this is a thing that has started with grassroots indie and become this explosion of video game developers all over the world, like coming together and showcasing their games and showing things off. And there's hits and misses, but the quality is getting up there to the point where it, some of these games seem like they're, you know, AAA titles, like with the graphics and everything. And so to take a step and look back at the roots and look at the nostalgia of it all is kind of what we're here to do today, and just give an overview all of what indies have brought to us.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to see how quickly the indie revolution really kind of took Nintendo by storm and even us fans. I believe that it kind of started, I mean, I would even credit Xbox for starting this, because, you know, they were the first to incorporate, I think it was like Xbox Live Arcade or whatever that was. Mm-hmm. And so they really embraced indie games. Microsoft has always really needed hits on their hands, and they really did find that on that platform. And so I think WiiWare and eventually DSWare, etc., those were their response to Microsoft introducing that and really embracing that, because they realized, like, if we don't jump on this now, we're going to lose out.
Yeah.
So they were smart to do that pretty quickly, even though they had a lot of troubles with WiiWare, with the storage limitations and stuff like that. But it's really fascinating to me how quickly it went from being a little like, hey, let's, you know, a little nod to indie developers, these cute little games, to them really inspiring Nintendo themselves and also incorporating their own IP into these indie games and giving them to indie developers. And like you said, Ryan, there's many indie games at this point, especially during the Switch's lifetime, that rival the production value of a lot of these bigger AAA games. There are many games that I prefer than over some of these third party and even first party titles.
Yeah, totally. You know, and it's not just, you know, taking over the AAA space, but also like bringing back series with their own spins, you know, like spiritual successors that they bring into the, you know, into the world. Like, you know, we haven't had an F-Zero in how long now? And there's, you know, they pop in and someone comes in and makes this fast RMX game.
Yep. And it's, in a way, it's been pretty interesting to see how, you know, with a lot of these indie games, it's made by these really passionate developers and these people that are looking for some type of answer to fill the void of some of these titles just not being developed. So as many of us know, F-Zero just wasn't being developed. And so, you know, these people were like, this is a great concept, a great gameplay loop that we want to work with. So as much as we love it, we can't really copy it, but here's our little spin on it. And Fast RMX is one of the best examples of that. And there's many other ones, like, as we all know, we love 3D platformers on this podcast. And so, you know, Microsoft hasn't really done anything with Banjo-Kazooie, nothing substantial in a long time, if ever, really. So Yooka-Laylee was their answer to that. And so, you know, it's brought to light some of the challenges of indie development, because, you know, as passionate as a lot of these developers can be, it takes a budget to make a game that's that involved and stuff. And so it's been an interesting learning process along the way. But I think we've learned a lot of lessons as a result of these little experiments. And so,
yeah,
other spiritual successors include Wargroove, which you mentioned, you know, when you and I were chatting, Ryan, Wonder Boy, Monster Boy, from the Wonder Boy games, and Bloodstained, because Castlevania is another title that for some reason hasn't had a good entry in a while. And so Bloodstained is the answer to that.
Yeah. And, you know, there's some gambles that people take, like being a spiritual successor, like, you know, Renegade Kid, or I guess Atui, now they took a chance on their game Chicken Wiggle, and it came out right around the time like Super Mario Maker came out, and it stepped on the stage creator, you know, side of things, and it was like within a week apart or something like that, or something where it just kind of killed the hype of what that game could have been. And you know, it was kind of crazy. Like, it was, you know, again, it was 3DS versus like you know, your Wii U, but you know, it's still like they took a chance. They made a spiritual successor. It came out at the wrong time, and it didn't hit very well. Which, you know, it's unfortunate, but that's the risk that you have with these spiritual successors. And some do just fine, you know, releasing inside, you know, right alongside their counterparts of a similar caliber. Like, you know, it just depends on how they time things. But, you know, we wanted a Paper Mario successor, or we wanted Paper Mario, and, you know, we got things like Bug Fables and things like that, where they brought us the Paper Mario style, and it came out around the same time. Like, Nintendo, like, shadow dropped their own Paper Mario, you know, new Paper Mario entry. But it didn't really hurt the other one that much, which was good. And it could be partly due to like Kickstarters and being backed, you know, and so it didn't hurt them super awfully because they already got their money up front before, you know, the other one came out and basically ate up all the funds there. But, you know, there's those little strategies that you have to take into account as an indie developer. But, you know, that whole market has become very different than when it first started out, you know, in its humble beginnings. On the early eShops and live arcades and things. So.
Yeah. And it's really highlighted the fact that video games aren't just these two-tier leveled experiences. Because before this, it was basically first-party games, which were the top-tier ones, and then third-party games, which were more B-tier, C-tier, and sometimes close to A-tier. But with indie games, it's really blurred that distinction. And so, like we mentioned before, some of these indie games are on the same level as these top-tier, I don't want to say like triple A games, but, you know, A tier games, I would say, and sometimes S tier, really. But yeah, it's a whole spectrum of things. And so, yeah, Nintendo's really still learning how to incorporate indies into their own brands.
Yeah. I don't think they're doing a horrible job. They did have some hurdles that they set up in the early days, like on the WiiWare, and there was some barriers to entry to get a dev kit. To be able to, you know, make games on the systems. But a lot of accessibility, a lot of more freedom or more, I guess, modern tech, like let's say the Switch, like you can just drag and drop from a PC created game to Switch, you know, pull back some shaders and things and get things running. I mean, it takes a lot of work, but, you know, it's a lot more friendly than just having to make something that's proprietary that is basically reworking your whole code just to work on something that's Nintendo specific. And so they've positioned themselves well to allow other, you know, third parties and these indie developers to come onto their platform and make games. And the fact that the Switch is portable is another thing. Like, you can play this on the go. Like, I could sit in front of my couch, but I could go and play this on the go right now, you know? So that's another big part why they went really well or did really well and do really well on the Switch.
Yeah, that's a great point, because originally indies felt more of like a knockoff. You know, a lot of the games felt like knockoffs or side quests and stuff like that, and these like quick little tech demos about the Wii and the Wii U, and you know, these developers had to think of cute, clever ways to incorporate the hardware. But now the hardware is more general with the Switch. The hardware is more about play it however you want. Before it was, you know, play it these specific ways. And so it's really changed the initiative from being like, okay, what's a unique experience on this system, to what's just a great experience. And regardless of where that originates from, whether it's on Steam Store or just on the Switch itself. So it's it really has blurred a lot of these lines from you know, I don't know what I'm saying, that it's all a spectrum now. That's the recurring theme with this.
You can get as weird as you want. Like, if you want to have gyro controls, you can. There's a lot of the modern systems that have gyro controls. If you want to, you know, move a game into a VR space, yes, the Switch has a VR space option with the Labo VR if you wanted to go there. If you didn't want to, like, you know, play something else. But some of these indie developers are bringing their games on VR systems, like, you know, just playing like in a Steam environment or Oculus, you know, or what have you, like, or even PlayStation for that matter, and be able to bring it to the Switch as an option for people. There aren't many out there, but there are some VR games accessible. There's also like people taking advantage of the HD rumble, and they don't have to, but there's an option they can. And, you know, it may take a bit of resources to put that extra like detail in there, but, you know, there's a lot of tools and a lot of new ways to experience games and to work with gimmicks and stuff, you know, a wide variety of experiences. And I hope that like whatever Nintendo brings next has more like things that people can use, tools to give people new gaming experiences. Whatever that may be, who knows? Like, is there an AR, VR space someday with Nintendo? Who knows? But it's nice to know that there are options, and Nintendo's all about innovating and giving people those options. And that it's not just something that happens on Nintendo now. Like, other systems have adopted that with, you know, force feedback on controllers. And, you know, you've got even the accessibility of streaming. Switch isn't great on streaming right now, but, you know, you have early Stadia streaming, you've got Xbox Game Pass and their streaming service going on. And so, like, you've got all these different platforms and ways to play. And so indies, really, they have an open world.
Mm-hmm.
And in a bunch of different ways that they can go. And like, it's no wonder that there are so many developers out there and teams that are working together to build these games and just, you know, reach out to anywhere that they can and market to anywhere and just be their own independent studio and shine. And what, there are some people that go around and like, hey, we want to get with this publisher so that we can get our games on shelves physically. You know, this is the rise of indies, or I would arguably say the rise of what would be their physical media from limited run games and things like that, where like people actually want this physical game with all the little bells and whistles and bonuses. Like, they don't have to necessarily go with a specific publisher. But at that point, if they pick up a publisher, you know, by early definition, they didn't have a publisher. So, well, they have a publisher now. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are they self-publishing? If they're using a company to produce those things, where does that line go? And like, what? I think the definition of an indie has changed quite a bit. And it's more of tenure and how long you've been around and how the quality of your games that you produce almost, mm-hmm. It seems. So it's got a different, it's in a weird, awkward teenager transition stage, you know, preteen, what have you. But mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of expansion and growth opportunities there. And again, not all games are excellent hits. Let's just be real.
Mm-hmm. But it's interesting to see how, you know, initially Nintendo showed other developers what can be done on their system, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's almost reversed in a way where indie developers show, hey, you have this hardware and this is our fun little idea. And here's something a little bit different. And so, but besides that, it's also allowed their own developers that are not even indie developers to make these smaller projects like Through Space and Harmonite and Dylan's Rolling Western, you know, games that don't really have this mass appeal really, but are just these fun little, you know, side projects for these developers just to mix things up in between their more major projects.
Mm-hmm. There's just, I kind of want to get into a bit of our nostalgia. Some of the games that we played in the early days of indie, you know, starting out. And we'll kind of sit there for a little bit, kind of go through kind of our indie experiences. For me personally, I jumped into the indie scene. Someone convinced me to get some game called Castle of Magic on the DSiWare. And I picked that up and played it, and it was cute. I mean, it wasn't long or fantastic, and I at that time I was convinced the game had to be like at least 100 hours and be Final Fantasy like for me to enjoy it, and that really kind of broke down that whole like preconceived notion that I had that a game had to have this epic story to be, you know, worth my time. And you know, I didn't get too many like indie games beyond that. I kept mainly to Nintendo stuff, but that opened the gate for me to try things on Wii and download games on Wii. And so I picked up some early Wii games, some WiiWare games, most notably like the Lost Winds 1 and 2 game. Those are fantastic, charming games. And then I also tried out, you know, I'm not too big in the puzzle genre game, but World of Goo, why not? Let's try it out. Absolutely. And I really enjoyed that game. The physics was really cool. I experienced that. And I was like, okay, so maybe indies aren't that bad. They aren't just like tech demos and just, you know, like lowest tier games. Like, this could be something.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of my early experiences, giving them a chance, essentially. What were kind of your early experiences with indie?
Yeah, honestly, when they first came out, I only got a few just because they were so novel, and I was like, all right, let's see what this is about. And I quickly realized, like, okay, these aren't, you know, major games that kind of rival, you know, Mario Galaxy or something on Wii. But at the same time, they were so different that they're in a league of their own. So I'm glad you brought up World of Goo, because that's one of the best, not just indie games on Wii, but one of the best games, period, on Wii. I think IGN even gave it Game of the Year that year. So it's just such a brilliantly developed game. So that's one. I haven't gotten to Cave Story yet, but I hear really good things about that. I would even argue that Shantae and Tokitori, even though they, you know, eventually found a publisher in Capcom, they were developed by these indie developers. And I would even argue that they're still indie developers, like WayForward and Two Tribes, who unfortunately aren't around anymore, but they're still in that category. Yeah. But there's so many. Through Space is a game that Nintendo themselves made that feels like a little indie game, and Pushmo as well, and their sequels.
Yeah, definitely. Oh yeah, that's a good one for Pushmo. You know, in the same publisher or same group that made World of Goo, you've got Human Resource Machine. Mm-hmm. You've got the Little Inferno game. All very like creepy themes. It's not post-apocalyptic worlds, but you know, this was indie was where SteamWorld came out. Like, they're still indie today, but like, they came out on DSi with their tower defense game. And people were raving about it. And then they started making like SteamWorld games and just doing awesome with the SteamWorld Dig and SteamWorld Heist and SteamWorld Dig 2. And now we've got a new one coming out that's basically SimCity, SteamWorld Build. And it's really cool to see them grow. And then they have like a card game as well with the Hand of Gilgamesh. SteamWorld. I can't even remember.
That's a great it's been so cool to watch these indie developers get exposure through these platforms and grow into a larger developer that all companies kind of look up to in a way.
Fascinating. Look at Shovel Knight. Like, they've been singing the same tune for how many years, and they just keep adding on to that one game, like free updates, and then they just, when a new console comes out, they sell the game again as a package with a collection. And like, you can buy that and get all the content from previous, like, nothing else added. And that's really cool. A cool model and definitely a bold move to give stuff away for free. And how can they do that? But like, they're obviously doing really well, and things went really well for them to have that. And in a way, like, Shovel Knight is a spiritual successor to a lot of our classic, you know, platformer games and what have you, from, you know, Castlevania to Mario to
like Mega Man.
Yeah, like straight up Mega Man stuff.
It's such a great game to the point where Nintendo gave them their own amiibo. They were the very first non-Nintendo company, I mean, outside of like the Smash characters, to get an amiibo.
That was so cool. Yeah, that was definitely. And they've got five now. Well. I think they've got five amiibo now.
True, at least, yeah, and like a golden one, which I think they're the only. Well, Mega Man has a golden one too, but
and there's a Mario Gold. There's that one. Yeah, it's so cool that they did that.
Dead Cells, you know, they worked with Konami to have Castlevania content in their game, and Dead Cells was inspired by Castlevania, and now Castlevania is probably going to be inspired by Dead Cells. And just as a side note, I think that indie games popularized the roguelite genre, which now other major developers are starting to experiment with as well.
It's just, I mean, the term indie darling hits it. Like, you know, some of these games come out and just they shine really, really brightly, and people just jump on that. But please don't miss out on the little guy. There are so many, like, again, this is the same tale. Like, when you played your AAA games and your your third party games, but you didn't touch the indies, like play those ones that people talk about, but also like find your niche, find what you love. Yeah. Like someone else is probably not going to enjoy what I'd say probably Fight Crab, but if you like weird combat games with crabs beat each other up, like try it out. If you're not big into like horror genre or something, but you like kind of like the psychological like weirdness, like try Oxenfree. Yeah. Like, you know, and that one's getting ready to have a sequel as well. And if you want to like kind of jump genres, you can try out The Messenger, which is a platformer, and then you know, try out the new game that's coming out, Sea of Stars, which is an RPG that's very much inspired by a spiritual successor, essentially, like we said before, to what Chrono Trigger was. Mm-hmm. So you know, there's a lot of genres, a lot of options, and a lot of things calling back to nostalgia, but also, you know, creating ground for new games and new experiences and new features, and kind of reinventing what we think about games. And, you know, they're building and inspiring each other to, you know, both AAA titles and first party and third party alike. So it's really cool to see these collaborations, and just, you know, I'm glad that people aren't just going and buying them up necessarily. Now, some people are getting bought up, but like, it's really cool to see that they're staying indie and they're keeping going what they're doing, and they're doing really well.
Yeah. And Nintendo's recognizing it. One example is Cadence of Hyrule, which is a, you know, a sequel to Crypt of the Necrodancer, I want to say.
Yeah, you got it.
A Zelda theme. And there's a reason why, you know, a lot of these games are getting physical versions. It's because people recognize their value and how precious they are. And, you know, and separate from that, the barrier to access has been bridged by A, having a physical game, and B, these very low prices. You know, you can get these, a lot of these games for just a few bucks. So if you haven't dove into the world of indies, I highly suggest you do.
Yeah, it's a wonderful world. I did want to give a shout out. We've had a couple of indie studios on the show. You know, we've got Old School Racer 2, Riddler Soft Games. They came on and they gave us some game codes. We got to distribute that and got to play it out and talk about it. We've also had, most recently, we had Kaze team come on and talk about their game. And it was a really like enjoying experience to get to talk with them and learn a bit more about the indie developer side. So if you want to listen to some past indie episodes, those would be some good ones to take a look at.
Highly recommend Kaze, by the way. Totally rivals Donkey Kong Country. Phenomenal.
Yeah. It's awesome. And we've even talked about Iconoclasts ourselves. It's an awesome game. You know, 3D platform lovers like New Super Lucky's Tale and, of course, Yooka-Laylee. And don't miss out on Yooka-Laylee sequel, for sure. That one's a great one with Impossible Lair. Definitely different. It's the 2.5D Donkey Kong Country feel. And so, yeah, definitely another one of those awesome 2D platformers, more on the keeping things rolling, keeping things moving type, unless more of the precision platforming, like you would have like a more like a Mario thing, I would think. But, you know, there's also your Metroidvania, you know, with Zeo Drifter, for me. Then you have your fun puzzle games here or there that you can play, and fighting games even. You know, Pocket Rumble is one of my favorites for the fighting game genre. And then you've got your what is it called? A Brawl Out. I think they had Yooka-Laylee, we had the crossover there, or maybe it was I know there's one of them that they had crossover with Yooka-Laylee, and then
Brawlhalla.
Brawlhalla. Okay. So yeah, they've had some games where they have crossovers from different things in them. You know, I think Shovel Knight appeared in a couple of games, like Blade Strangers had Shovel Knight appearing randomly in it. That was a Nicalis game, which I highly recommend pretty much all of Nicalis games. They're an indie studio, I would still argue. And they've got games like Ikaruga, you know, that was on GameCube, and they brought it forward several times. And I'm going to be picking that up soon here. I'm getting Ikaruga for Switch, because it's a game I always wanted to own. You know, that's a shmup. You've got genre options and different takes on different genres. Like, you want to do a dungeon shoot 'em up, like Enter the Gungeon, go for it. Like, it's fun. It's crazy. It's quirky. Dungeon crawling shmup that's procedurally generated. I mean, this has brought on the era of roguelite and roguelike games. You know, one of the early ones on Switch was like Has Been Heroes. But you know, these games that are very arcadey in their feel, like you run out of lives, you start back at the very beginning, like no progression. And then there's Roguelite, which is you run out of lives and you get to carry some things over so that your next run is a little bit more powerful. You know, eventually keep pushing through to get to the end. And, you know, you've got breakout games in that genre, like Hades, which has won, you know, countless awards.
And it's been cool to see how the indie world has opened up the floodgates for all these brand new, newly invented genres that the bigger developers have been taking advantage of as well. Those are really good examples. And one that's kind of like a mix of genres is Pocket Card Jockey, which Nintendo themselves made. It's like, you know, solitaire and I don't know, like it's, I don't know, simulation blend or something. I don't even.
Horse care simulator. Right.
Yeah. So it's just been fun to see these weird experiments and see how far they take off.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, some standout games like Blossom Tale was like a Zelda, 2D Zelda inspired game. It went really well. The top down feel. You got your Celeste, your crazy hard platformer. That just got some really great like story that deals with like real life things with like mental, you know, mental health in a lot of ways. And so it's really cool to see that. You've got, you know, obscure puzzlers, you've got like new experiences, like being a snake and controlling a snake to do platforming. like super off the wall and not everybody's cup. But like, and then you've got things like Stardew Valley, like it's just like almost like Animal Crossing, but like on some other different level. Like it's so cool to see that you've got options and don't miss out on these things. Like you can have your arcade experience from the days if you liked Intellivision, if you like Coleco, if you liked Atari, like you can get those. Like if you run out of lives, you start back at the beginning, all fresh, all new, new run. Like you can get that arcade style feel. Like, you know,
yeah.
Killer Queen Black is like the arcade style feel too.
Absolutely. One of my favorites. So good. And it's so cool because, you know, there's no definition for what an indie game has to be. It can be this short little dinky thing, or it can be this massive game. It can range from being a game that you play in between all these other bigger AAA games, mm-hmm. or it could be something that you look forward to and appreciate on the same level as a bigger thing like Tears of the Kingdom. And you know, speaking of Zelda-like games, I mean, of course, there's no game remotely as close to Tears of the Kingdom, but I'm saying something that's as you know, passionate and endearing as a game like that. But speaking of Zelda-like games, I don't know if you've ever heard of Idle-Do, Ryan.
I've heard of it.
I just love that. I didn't know this until recently, but the title comes from it being like, it's not Zelda, but it'll do.
Okay, that's so awesome.
Yeah, isn't that great? So if you like Zelda games, at least check out the second one from what I've heard. It'll do too, which you can get physically, by the way, and I think from Nicholas.
Oh, nice.
Now that I think of it, yeah. So it's just, there's I could go on and on about indie games. There's just so much to say.
Variety of art styles and experiences. You've got Chris Tales with the RPG. It's very much similar to the Paper Mario style as far as controls go. Like the time button presses when you hit to do extra damage and things like that. You know, precision button pressing combat, turn-based combat. And then you've got the co-op experiences. Like you've got 2D and 3D. You've got Dragon Marked for Death. You can play online with friends. You've got Nine Parchments where you can do co-op together and run through a 3D environment, kind of like Diablo 3, Diablo like experience. You've got multiplayer. You've got these games that come out that were old games that indie publisher or indie developers have come and taken the game and wanted to bring it to Switch, like Chex Quest, like randomly, like, you know, and things like that. Was the Panzer Dragoon, I want to say.
Yeah.
People brought that forward. You know, it was Sega IP, but they were able to bring that forward to the game, you know. And it's not to say that some of these games aren't like colossal stinkers. Like there's a lot of stigma going around the Kickstarter and not fulfilling those promises. And you know, you've got the Mighty No. 9, which was a very broken game when it came out. It was not ready. It's supposed to be a Mega Man spiritual successor, so you don't always have that win. You know, it touch a bit on the unfortunate timing release of Chicken Wiggle, but when Hatch Tales was announced, which is the I guess the HD remake of Chicken Wiggle, it's taken on a new form. You know, they did a Kickstarter and they still haven't delivered on it for how long now? And you know, they've released a bunch of other games in the meantime. And you know, even one of the early indie announcements was Treasure Knots, which is the same company. And they just haven't gotten around to getting that done. And they've released a lot of little gamey games. Like they had like a Qbert-like game that was it was okay. It was cute. But again, very arcadey, called Totes the Goat. And then they have like a little like they like blocky like soccer people, like you play like soccer together. And there was like even a runner that they made. They had a Picross game randomly too. Like it's like even like the same genre or the same developer can make a variety of different games. And it doesn't have to be like big budget. It's just a fun little experience, you know, stepping stones. But the sour like feeling of like this game hasn't come out yet, like why it's been announced for so long. Like, you know, for me, like I love Pocket Rumble, the two-button fighter, but they announced it like one of the first Nintendo Directs that Switch had, and it didn't come out for many years later, and nobody knew it came out and forgot about it by that point. And it was unfortunate to see that, but you know, they hit a lot of struggle getting things running on Switch. They had a lot of optimism, and they were some of the early ones to figure out, oh, it's not as, you know, drag and drop as they wanted it to be. Another colossal failure at the time was Murphy's Law. It was supposed to be the non-violent shooter where you stole body mass from each other, and it was a multiplayer shooter like that. And it was a complete mess when it came out, especially online play. And that's pretty much all there was to it. It was unplayable at some points. They've made it into a better game now. And I guess there's still people that are enjoying that today. They've made it, you know, a good experience, basically what they originally promised, but it was definitely a little too late for what they were going to have. And just in general, like waiting forever for a game to finally come out. Like, why is it not come out in the Kickstarters that follow that? Like, we've got Swapfire that came out on Wii, you know, one of the earlier indies that took advantage of the idea of dropping your price down to insanely cheap, like 99 cents. So that like everybody will go in and like, well, I'll just spend like $1.99 or like even a cent or something to buy this game, and it, you know, rockets up the popularity chart as like a standout game. So when they went and announced, oh yeah, we're gonna make it two, well, Nintendo didn't like that they pulled that stunt, and so they're like, well, you're not gonna get a dev kit. So then they weren't able to actually move forward with Swapfire 2, and so like they weren't able to fill their Kickstarter there. So, you know, there's some risks involved in being an indie and taking these chances and it being an utter colossal failure. But at the same time, we see these people pick themselves back up, get back on their bike and keep riding and keep patching out things and getting into a good game. You know, we've got AAA games that are doing that these days with, you know, CD Projekt Red and with their Cyberpunk. And you've got, I guess, Redfall is another one that wasn't the greatest at first when it first came out. It just wasn't well-received necessarily. And there was some buggy issues and things that just did not go over well for everybody. You've got those risks with the Mighty No. 9s and what have you. But overall, like, the tune is a positive one for indies. They are so, so wonderful.
And it's just nice to see that we have this platform that can be used by anyone who simply has a passion for creating something that they just really connect with and want to see. And it's just a great canvas for them to really experiment with and give us these passion projects. And I definitely want to highlight two things that has really elevated my passion for these types of projects, visuals and music and just, you know, audio creation. So a lot of these games are made in a way so like obviously they don't have the biggest budget, and so they work within those confines. And one of the ways that they get around it, at least in the visual department, is by creating these artistic styles that are still really impressive and inspired. But you know, they don't like I said, they don't have the budget to create these super high density pixelated or you know what are visuals, for lack of a better way.
Yeah.
So you know, the sprite art, I would argue, really came back as a result of these indie games, because that was it's a simple way of they're simple to make, and yet they're so inspired and beautiful in their own unique inherent way. And music is just, the music scene in indie games is just popping off, really. Even some of the crappier games have incredible music. So
yeah,
Breath of the Wild doesn't have that much music at all, but that's okay, because we're getting these incredible music musical creations from these indie developers.
Yeah. So I mean, it doesn't have to be like orchestral, you know, it can be chiptune.
Yeah.
And like, you know, checking off all the boxes, Undertale, one man team that made this game, like Toby Fox. Well, he had some help with some of the art direction and stuff, like as far as the coding and everything, like did it all himself. Awesome chiptune music, really awesome, like art, 8-bit art style, 16-bit art style in that range. Just wonderful story. A lot of like, you're not going to get the same experience each time you play. There's a lot of deep lore that you can explore and like things to uncover, and like just it's a really great package all together. And that's definitely a standout indie overall.
That's a great point, that it really only takes one person to create some of the most incredible games that we have available to us. Another example is Octahedron, which is also on Switch, and I played it. I got the physical version through Super Rare Games, and I tweeted out the developer, "Hey, you guys are incredible. What an amazing team you have to make such an incredible game." And the person tweeted back to me, "Hey, it's just me. I do all the social media. I did all the music. I did all the visuals and programming and art and all that." It's just one person, and it's just amazing to me.
Yeah. You know, Axiom Verge, the dude, one person team, like he basically raised the money to, you know, help his family, like with medical and things like that. Like outstanding. Like, you know, part of the proceeds just go to help like their family with the medical bills and stuff. Like, wow, like so cool that like there's these passion projects. There is so much heart behind indies. It's just unreal. Like just to know that like they love video games and they want people to experience their stories, their art, their experiences, their creations, but also like help out like in their communities and things. Like it's so cool to see that yeah, used in such positive, inspiring ways that you don't necessarily see the AAA titles doing, you know. So
yeah, that's a great point.
And for a good cause.
Right. And you know, Nintendo's been embracing the magic of these games by not just highlighting them in their own Nintendo Directs, but giving them their own separate form of Nintendo Directs with the Nindie Directs, where it just highlights all these indie games. And I think it's at the point where Nintendo realizes that indies have been pivotal to Nintendo's success, specifically with the Switch. I would honestly say that the Switch would not be in the position that it's in had it not been for all these phenomenal indies that were launched at the beginning of the Switch's life. Yes, we had some great Nintendo titles, but it was just back to back banger after banger with these indie games. And so Nintendo realizes that, and I hope that they continue to embrace that as we move forward.
Definitely. Yeah. So I did want to highlight just a bit of like, let's zoom out and take a look at what our favorites were so far in this point in time. Like what are some of our absolute most memorable indie titles that we've played recently? It doesn't have to be on Switch. It could be, you know, early days or up through today, or, you know, and then we'll get into a bit about like what we're anticipating coming out for indie in the future. Before we wrap up the episode. So let's go ahead and get started. Chris, do you want to kick us off on some of your favorite indies that you've come across?
Oof, that's a great question.
Now you've got lots of physical games you've picked up, so you've got a lot to pick from.
I sure do. So, I mean, I'll just quickly highlight the games that I mentioned at the beginning of the episode that I was rexing about. The Gardens Between is just, I will say, like, something that I love about indies is that they are so much more emotional to me than what I think I would get in other first party games, because they're coming from such a deep artistic place with a lot of these creators. So the Gardens Between is basically an environmental puzzle game where you manipulate time, and it's kind of, I mean, that I'll just leave it at that, but I love the idea because it's, the world is based on the memories that these two friends have, their childhood memories, and it's like all these metaphors within the environment that symbolizes these iconic moments in their life. And so I just think that's so moving and something you would never see from a first party developer. And the other one, Gris, is completely hand-drawn and has this watercolor aesthetic. And it's so simple, but so mesmerizing. And for that game, it's just about a gray world that you slowly bring color back into the world. And it's so emotional. It's all these pieces put together come into this amazing package. And the other one is A Short Hike, which has this aesthetic that's kind of like a PlayStation game, PlayStation 1 game, that's like purposely, you know, what's the word, voxel-y, or, you know, it's crappy on purpose. Crappy polygons, like jaggies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's like a very, very, very simple 3D platformer. It's like 2.5 isometric view. And it has that same charm of Animal Crossing with these cute characters. And it's just very chill. And you just explore at your own pace. And there's just all these cute little side quests for you to have. And it's not a big game. You can complete it in like an hour, or you can take your time and have it be a little bit longer than that. But it's just, those are just a few examples of some games that I just beat and that I just love so, so, so much. And I love them in such a different way from these first party games. And one that I'm playing right now, Wavetale, it really embraces majestic, I don't know what the word is, but the vibe of Wind Waker is so, God, it's gonna drive me nuts.
Atmospheric doesn't quite meet it, does it?
Yeah, atmospheric is another word. But anyway, Wind Waker is so magical, and I guess I'll stick with majestic for now. Has the vibe of Wind Waker, and is a 3D platformer. Finally, there's so few for some reason, but it really nails what I'm looking for in a 3D platformer.
Yeah.
It's just a very unique experience. What about you, Ryan?
Some of my ones that were just favorites throughout, I guess, time. I might get a little emotional on this one, but Oxenfree is a really good one. It's kind of a psychological horror. It's not like super, like, it's just weird and creepy, but in a kind of like butterfly effect sort of way. And you know, the person that recommended it to me used to be a co-host on the show, he passed away due to COVID. It was super sudden, but you know, Chris White he recommended that game to me, and we experienced it, and we got to have a good time together, heart to heart, on this game and the experience. And it was how phenomenal this indie game was. Like, when we were like, I was still not the greatest of mind on indie games. And like, he challenged me, like, pick up this game, and I did, and I really enjoyed it. Some other ones that I really enjoyed, Pocket Rumble. I've waited forever for that one to come out. When it finally came out, I really enjoyed the tight gameplay. It's just like if you took a fighter, put it on a Game Boy, And, you know, it's got two buttons, that's it, and your directional pad. And there's, like, so much complexity what you can do with that, just that simple control scheme and the button combinations. It's so charming. And the music, wonderful. An earlier one that didn't necessarily come out on Nintendo first, it was an Xbox 360 thing, Castle Crashers from the Behemoth. You know, that eventually did come to Switch. You can play multiplayer online. That's a really great just beat-em-up game. You can play with friends. A la, I guess, Scott Pilgrim or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles styles. You've got probably my favorite game, like my favorite indie game so far that I've ever played is Inscription. Just, it's so wonderful. It comes across as this like horror, creepy game. And it's roguelite. But there's so much more to it than just that. It's not just roguelite. It pulls some strings of some fourth wall breaking and ARG stuff, even if you get really deep into the lore. But it's not dissimilar to like Doki Doki Literature Club or something like that, where it breaks down that genre barrier of a game, and it goes into so much more depth than what you'd experience or expect. Definitely one that I recommend. And that's pretty much like the standout ones for indies. Like, and I'm still exploring new ones. Like, I picked up Shovel Knight. I got it for free. I got Shantae for free on Wii U. Like, I got these games on Wii U, but I didn't play them back then. And so when I got them on Switch, I played them and I really enjoyed them. And it's just, it was like, you know, Tom recommended that I get the Blaster Master Zero, you know, and play that game. Pretty good. And it's a lot of just friends recommending games, and I hope that like us recommending these games like passes it on to you, and you get to have these awesome experiences too. And then we'd love to hear yours as well. Like, what do you love? What are you going to look forward to? And the last part of our segment is our show. We just want to talk about like games that are coming out that we're really looking forward to, like indie wise. You know, there's some that have been long awaited, like sequels. We finally did get the Cuphead DLC. But it could be DLC that hasn't come out yet, with Silk Song. You know, that's something that people have been waiting for from Hollow Knight for a long time, and it hasn't come out just yet. But, you know, these sequels and Oxenfree 2, for that matter, things that we just want to get our hands on because they've made an impression when their first games came out. Or perhaps, you know, they give promise of a game that is a spiritual successor. So I've got a short list here of, you know, Little Nemo. I backed it on Kickstarter. I love Little Nemo. I loved the movie growing up as a kid. Watched it all the time with my grandma. Absolutely great idea. You know, Slumberland and the adventures when a little kid falls asleep and the nightmares he has to battle. And, you know, they're coming out with a Little Nemo game for Switch, indie game. And we've got Sea of Stars, of course, the Chrono Trigger successor. I have not played Chrono Trigger before, not successor, but spiritual successor. I've not played the Chrono Trigger before, but this is kind of my first stab at giving 2D RPGs a chance of that genre. And I'm really looking forward to experiencing that. I got to play the demo and I liked what I played of that. So I'm curious to see the worlds and the stories that they've produced with that one. And then, of course, you know, if it ever comes out in this century, Hatch Tales. I'm looking forward to playing that game because it did miss its time to shine coming out so close to Mario Maker. And we're just hoping that when they do finally release it, that it delivers on what was promised, even though it's a bit too late for that matter. And, you know, that was definitely not well handled. But and then, of course, we don't even know what's happening with Swatfire 2, but it'd be kind of cool to play that one. And are there any games that you're looking forward to? That's on the horizon, some things that you heard announced recently, or things that like, oh yeah, that might actually really interest me, like anything that really wowed you in an indie direct or what have you.
Yeah, well, real quick, the word I was looking for was whimsical.
Whimsical, okay.
Whimsical, so yeah, the whimsicalness of Wind Waker is found in Wavetale. But something that I look forward to in indie games is the unexpected. Because something that indie games give us is something that's, you know, well, let me just backtrack and say that with a lot of these bigger games, with these sequels to these bigger games, like whatever the next Mario game is, we know what that's going to be like. It's something that's expected. And so something that I love about indies is the unexpected, is how they give us these curveballs and take us out of our comfort zones and give us something that's completely fresh and unexpected that we didn't even know that we wanted. And, you know, I kind of liken that to the GameCube era, where we wanted all these specific sequels and stuff, but they ended up giving us these weird experimental games. And Nintendo kind of stopped giving us that. You know, they gave us Metroid Prime, but they don't really take as many chances anymore. And so indie games kind of fill that void and give us something that's unexpected and even deeper and more emotional. So some of the games that I haven't played yet are Night in the Woods and Celeste. And these are games that talk about, that kind of touch on topics that are things that other developers wouldn't even touch, like depression and, you know, suicide and other more, you know, really mature topics that are hard for us to talk about, but they're so necessary to the human experience. And I think it's such a beautiful thing to have this artistic medium for these creators to experiment with these topics. So I'm looking forward to these unexpected games. So yeah, it's just fun to know that I don't know what's out there and on the way.
You know, we feel that a lot with things we were hoping come to the Switch. You know, they were on other platforms. You know, I've got Ori that finally came Switch, and they've got some really great emotional moments there. And just things you didn't expect to be a huge emotional impact. Like, dealing with, like, mental illness in games is a really cool thing. And, like, dealing with people, you know, struggling with their marriage with, like, It Takes Two, and how they work through things, you know, together to get back to where they were, and the struggles that they were causing for their own, you know, their own daughter because of the things that they were doing. They weren't being considerate of things. You know, I've not played through the whole game, but there's that. And then there's also, like, you know, Senua's Sacrifice, like, you know, it's very much deals with, like, the voices in your head. Like, you get to experience what that's like, put on headphones when you play that game and just hear all the little voices, like, talking and try to figure out, like, these are all the things that this person is hearing, but also has to do, like, their tasks and stuff around, despite all the noise and you know, suggestions and things like that. Just a lot of different feelings that it's hard to keep it all. You know, you get to experience those things and know what people are going through and relate to people and help overcome certain tasks and some things to help you become a better person. Like, when you experience these stories and learn how to cope with things. It's just really cool that indie is the platform to give us those experiences and to grow and learn about our humanity.
Yeah, totally agree. Well said, Ryan.
All right. Well, I think that wraps up the end of our show. I hope you enjoyed this Independence Day episode. It was fun. We had a lot to talk about. I'm sure we've got lots more to talk about, but definitely don't have all the time in the day. So I'll go ahead and wrap up the show. You can find the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Podcasts, Pandora Podcasts. We also have some limited content on YouTube. You can also find us on Facebook at Nintendo NOS for our Facebook page, on TikTok, Nintendo_NOS, on Twitter at Nintendo_NOS, Instagram, Nintendo NOSIN. You can find us, you can shoot us an email at NintendoNostalgiaIN@gmail.com. You can also call us on our nostalgia hotline, share your memories, and show us some love at 317-969-5690.
Yeah. And we also have a voicemail from Josh that I totally forgot about. So we'll leave that in this episode as well. So you can hear Josh's thoughts on indie games. But it's been so great to be back, especially with you, Ryan. And I look forward to many, many more episodes. Sorry, everyone, that there's been a hiatus, that we've been on hiatus, but we're going to get around to it as best we can. We can't promise it's going to be consistent and regular, but we'll put out an episode whenever we can, because we love this so much. And we're so thankful for all of you for sticking with us. And thank you for listening, and looking forward to many more episodes coming up.
Yeah, we're definitely glad to be back and playing with Bauer. Later, Preston.
Bye, everyone.
Hey, Hey everybody, this is Josh. I wanted to call and leave a voicemail at least for the episode. I apologize, my technology is a little out of date. The laptop is a piece of junk, but I do want to join again soon. But anyhow, with the indies, just to jump around a little bit, to name off a few of my all-time favorites, of course, Ukulele and The Impossible Lair. You know, that surprises no one. I like the original as well. Shovel Knight really got me going on indies. I feel like it probably did for a lot of people. I love all those games. Gosh, there was really a lot back then that pulled me in all at once, like SteamWorld Dig. But one of the most recent I played is, I'm trying to think of how it's pronounced, Cadence of Hyrule. Yeah, so that one's technically an indie game, which I thought was kind of weird that they actually let them mess with the Zelda IP, but I tried it a while back, wasn't real sure on it, but I finally went back into it and took the time to figure it out and ended up really enjoying it. If you like Zelda, if you I've tried it before maybe for a minute, weren't too sure, I recommend going back and giving it another try. It may take you a little bit to get used to it. You may have to mess with the settings to make it a little easier for you, but I think it's actually a really good game, so I'm very glad I've jumped into that. Might be picking up Bug Fables next, since there is a big sale on that one. So yeah, I would almost have to write down like a huge list to think of all the indies I've enjoyed over the years. Gosh, I can't even think of the name of some of them. Axiom Verge was one I got into. Never did play the second one. Guacamelee was pretty good. Snake Pass. A lot of good ones out there. A lot I've probably looked over for one reason or another, but yeah, hoping to see more good stuff from there. Thank you guys, and I hope to talk to you again soon.